Well, hello, everybody. Hello, this is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I wish you could actually see my guest because she is gorgeous, Dr. Lori Buckley. And Lori is beautiful inside and out, and I know that sounds a little bit like a cliche, but in her case, it's absolutely true. Welcome to the program, Dr. Lori.
Thank you, Dr. Diana. You are the best, and, you know, I am so thrilled to be here talking to you. I love talking to you, whether it's on your radio show or in your office or in your home, for that matter,
happy
to be here.
Yes, and you and your partner came to Seattle a couple of months ago for the Gottman workshop, and I didn't know you were going to be there, and my partner and I were there, and it was just such a happy reunion.
It was.
Yes, and we benefited from hearing all of Dr. John Gottman's, Julie Gottman's ideas. 3,000 couples over 30 plus years, so that's a lot of research.
Absolutely, and I know, like you and me, what we do is we talk about Gottman and his research all the time and use it in our practice, and be able to see him and hear the stories was so wonderful, because what he says makes a lot of sense, and we see it every day in our practice, and it's nice when the research backs up our own experience of what we see in our practice every day.
Absolutely, and the more tools, because you've been in practice a long time and so have I, the more tools that we can bring to our practice and help our couples with, just it's really makes us better therapists. Now,
very
you have
true.
Yes, and you have a wonderful new book, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And listeners, those of you who are listening live, I know many will be getting the archives later, but if you're listening live and you have a question for Dr. Lori Buckley and you're the first caller, she will give you this book no charge. And so you need to, if you call in, you need to stay on the line after the call, because our producer will get your name and address and then forward it to me, and I'll forward it to Lori. So that's how that works. This 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. First of all, it is a concise book, and it says on the back cover, before you make the decision to end your relationship, make the decision to read this book instead. And of course, Lori is internationally known as a relationship and sex expert. And what she does in this book is to give you very specific, very easy steps to improve your sex life and your relationship. And it's an easy-to-read book, and I plan on using some of your exercises. I'll give you credit and suggest your book, of course, in some of my own couples counseling, because it's really, really good. Why are decisions different? Because you make a big point about this really at the beginning of your book. Why are decisions different than, yes, tell us.
You know, I guess we could call it semantics, but to back up a little bit about what you're saying about the book being concise and easy, it really was my intention to create a book or really a resource for couples to go to that isn't overwhelming or filled with jargon or really complicated ideas. Mm-hmm. These things really are simple, because what I have found in my work and in my own life is that it is those simple little decisions that we make that make all of the difference. And to answer your question about the difference between decisions or desires, it's a big one. And so for me, when I say decisions, what I mean is really that concrete idea that really connects the desire with action and commitment. So when we have a desire for something and we're really clear about that and we know what it's about, we know why we want it, and then we follow it up with commitment and action, and you really need all of those pieces, that's a decision. If we decide that we're actually going to do something, it's not really a goal It's not a resolution, and this is a good time to be having this interview because this is a time that a lot of people reflect, right? We reflect. It's the new year.
Yes.
We think, okay, what do we want to be different? And we set our New Year's resolution. And oftentimes they fall by the wayside, don't they?
Oh, yes, they do. I think you point out in your book, I'm pretty sure it was in your book, that gyms are filled with people in January and February, and then gradually people stop going to the gym because
yes.
I mean, the most common New Year's resolution is lose weight, exercise more. But apparently that decision wasn't as well thought out as it could have been. And I like you've got the desire, you've got the actions, and in your book you've got a lot of action steps. Let's back up to what you quote Eleanor Roosevelt in your book, and this really resonated for me, and I'm so glad you quoted her. She said, "Do one thing a day that scares you."
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. So tell us how that made a difference in your own life when you really began to incorporate Eleanor Roosevelt's idea.
Yeah, it's made a huge difference in every area of my life. And I think the listeners, if you think about your own big decisions or really growth or successes that you've had, it usually came from doing something that might have been scary, that might have been taking a risk, that might have been uncomfortable. And so when we challenge ourselves to do those things, and another way to say that is we don't let fear stop us, we don't let it get in the way of us really going for what we want, we can really achieve and experience great, great things. And it doesn't have to be a big, giant thing. And that's really the point of my book, right? It's just making one small little decision. But when you think about this, doing something scary every day, it's not something that you have to plan for. You don't have to think, okay, what's my scary thing? I need to find a scary thing. You don't even have to do that. You will find that something scary will present itself almost every day. In my own life, it has been things such as something as simple as flying, for example.
Yeah.
I'm no longer afraid of flying, I'm happy to say, but there was a time in my life when I was scared to death of flying. I mean, really just shaking, really, not the whole time, you know, because people say it's the takeoff and the landing, that's the worst. So somewhere in the middle, as long as there wasn't any turbulence, I was okay.
Yeah. Yes.
But I was not going to let my fear of flying stop me from traveling because I love traveling. I love going to new places and meeting new people and, you know, eating new food and all of the things that traveling really involves. So,
and I happen to know you just got back from Italy and you learned Italian some time ago so that you could go to Italy and be fluent, or nearly fluent, I guess, in Italian. And good for you. I mean, that was a decision, wasn't it?
Yes, that was a big decision. So it used to be, you know, this dream and this desire to go spend time in Italy or to learn another language. You know, again, sometimes our decisions can start with a dream, as they should, or a goal. But again, it's that decision. We do something further with it. And then at one point, I said, okay, now's the time. I'm doing it. And I started studying the language and to, you know, improve my language skills and to also fulfill a dream. I decided to go spend an extended period of time in Italy. And now what I've done is I have made the decision to spend really a total of 3 to 6 months every year in Italy. So I don't have to live there. I've decided that I can go spend time. And so this year I've already been there twice, and I have an apartment there that I don't own, but I rent when I want to stay there. And it's like a second home. So it's a decision I made, and now it is a very big part of my life, and I love it. And I'm continuing to study Italian because everything that we decide that we want, it very rarely does it have an ending. Sometimes it does, but oftentimes we do need to keep going. So it's like a language or any skill. We're never really done. I mean, there's always room to grow. And I always like to talk about, you know, professional athletes or musicians. They never, ever stop practicing. They never stop growing or evolving. Although, you know, an athlete, they do have a time period. But we have also discovered that there are people who are much, much older than we ever imagined they could be and still be really in athletic shape. So it does say something for the dedication that you put behind it as well.
Just as an aside, aren't we lucky that we can do our work until we're very old?
Because we get better and better, right?
We get better and better.
It's true because, you know, we never want to stop learning. And, you know, right. I was looking through the book. I actually wrote this book a little over a year ago.
Yes.
And
but it was just published recently.
Yeah, recently. And I was looking through it, preparing for our interview.
Yes.
And I'm very proud of it. I really love it. And
you should be.
Thank you. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
I really do still believe fully in all of the things. And yet, I think, wow, you know, even since I wrote this book, there's so many new things I want to say that I could add to it. And, you know, maybe I will. But, you know, the growth and the learning never, ever stops. And that's another great thing about our field is not only can we go to things like Gottman, like you and I went to, mm-hmm. but I know for me, and I'm pretty sure it's true for you, I mm-hmm. learn every day. I am inspired every day by the people who sit in my office. I am
absolutely
amazed.
You know,
yeah.
And then it's such, there's so much deep satisfaction when we can see our clients change and become happier. Well, we facilitate that change. I mean, they do the work, but we
right,
facilitate
exactly.
it. And that, I mean, I often reflect on that. What, how fortunate to be in this field, to be doing this job. It's not even a job. I mean, sometimes I get a check. Well, often I get a check at the end of the session. I think, wow, they're paying me to do this work that I love so much.
Right, right. Well, you know, the old saying, right, if you do what you love, you never work another day in your life. But I have to point out, you said we're fortunate, and it's true, we are fortunate. But let's just look at what got us here, right? If you think about what got us to where we are, our profession, mm-hmm. the work that we do, it's a series of decisions followed, you know, again, by desires, by the commitment. The commitment's really important, and the action. And all of those decisions and the things that we did, sometimes moment by moment, day by day, week by week, month by month, or year by year, over time, we are now in a position where we're able to do what we love. And it doesn't happen overnight, and it certainly has very little to do with luck.
Well, right, you know, I've been, because I'm older than you, I've been in this field perhaps a little bit longer than you, about 32 years now, and I do feel like I'm, because of my clinical experience and my life experience, I'm better at what I do, and I think you are too, or you feel the same way. Let's go to, in your book, Bad Decisions, and bad decisions come out of a place where people are not willing to take risks. And of course, you and I have always been able to take risks. You write on your page 7, the decision to not make a decision is almost always based on fear. And you talk about regrets in life, and that made me reflect on my late husband, Charlie. We had a really incredible marriage, and it was passionate. It was not my first marriage, but it was a very, very good marriage. And then he died so suddenly. But when he died, it was shattering, of course, but I did not have regrets about what we had not said or had not done, because we said it all, we did a whole lot, and I'm so grateful for that. And in fact, studies have shown that when a beloved person dies and we don't have regrets, oh, if only I'd said, if only we'd done, that the path of grief is a little smoother.
Yeah, it makes sense, and you know, really, the fact that you had that love in your life, and you know, unfortunately shorter than you would have liked, but so rich and so full. And the truth is none of us know how long we are the person, you know, that we love or people we love in our life are going to be here. So to, and, you know, certainly we don't want to live in that place that, you know, it could be the end, but being in the moment and fully living it and not living in a place of fear, going for it is another way to say it. And that's what you did. And I'm glad you did. And it's such a wonderful blessing, you know, to have love in your life and not to have those regrets. And look, you know, we can look back and have regrets. Regrets by themselves don't have to be a horrible thing.
Exactly.
As long as we learn from it. Yeah, so, you know, the decision to not make a decision is a decision, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes we make decisions, and sometimes they're bad. But, you know, bad, I wish I could think of a better word, but I just think it's something we can all relate to. We can look back and go, oh, man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. Usually the things we regret are about things we didn't do rather than things we did. But sometimes we do take that risk, and it ends up being, in hindsight, not such a great thing. We think, oh, man, had I had known that, I would have done it differently. But, you know, just going forward, it's still going forward because we do make mistakes. And when we can look at that and go, okay, what did I learn from that? And then continue to grow and move forward in our life, you know, it's really a wonderful, wonderful thing. Yeah. And so that's important. Yeah.
And in your book on page 8, you write very wisely, when you make a decision, ask yourself these questions. Is it realistic? Can I commit to this for at least 3 months? And I want to ask you about why 3 months. And is there anything that will stop me from doing this? Very good questions. Can you expand on them?
Yeah, you know, sometimes we, you know, we have hopes and dreams and desires, and we make a decision, and we, for whatever reason, you know, we talked about it, it doesn't work out. I can talk about, and I mentioned this in the book, the difference between either making a decision, not making a decision, or not making a conscious decision or choice. So when we're conscious about something, and these three questions can put you into really making a very conscious decision.
Yes, yes.
Is it realistic? And to think about that. And, you know, it's such somewhat subjective. There might be, you might say, okay, I want to be a rock star, for example. And, you know, somebody might say, well, that's not realistic. You know, it's 1% of the population are rock stars, and, you know, you can't make money being a rock star. So there's always the naysayers. And this isn't about what people think, what people say, or the statistics. It's about really you getting clear about what's true for you. So is it realistic? Now, if you're going to look at that in a somewhat objective way, you can say to yourself, well, okay, the odds are against me. It's going to be very difficult. Maybe it's unlikely, but there certainly is a possibility there that because I know I have talent, because I've studied for all these years, because I know what's out there, that I feel it's realistic enough for me to move forward. So then the next one is, can I commit to this for at least 3 months? So that's a good question. Why did I say 3 months?
Yes, three months.
Now, there are some things that may not require 3 months. There are some things that may require a much longer commitment. So it's, you know, it's such a subjective thing. It really depends on what's going on. The reason why I wrote 3 months is, you know, there's a lot of different research out there talking about what really creates a new habit. And, you know, some of the studies suggest that it's 6 weeks, and some might even say 3 weeks, and some might say 3 months. I went for the longer period because, of course, that we're setting ourselves up for more success. The longer we can commit to something, the better our chances are of success. So, you know, it depends. If, for example, we go back to the rock star thing, it certainly might require more than 3 months. But when you're talking about a change, you're talking about a relationship, which is what this book is about, doing something positive in your relationship, making changes that are going to be beneficial, then 3 months is a good one. You know, and again, maybe 3 months is longer than you can stand if you find yourself in a very bad relationship or something that feels not right for you. And of course, I talk about that too. Sometimes the best decision is the decision to get out of a relationship if it's abusive in any way, of course. And bad, again, what does that mean? You know, again, there are some lines that are grayer than others. But oftentimes we think we're in a bad relationship, and because our partner is too whatever or not enough whatever, and we're not feeling good or in love, right? I'm sure you hear that all the time. I love them, I'm just not in love anymore.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore they think they're in a bad relationship. And sometimes that's based on some false beliefs and lack of awareness or knowledge. So to commit to making some positive changes and doing this work for a few months will give you more information to be able to make a more informed and conscious decision.
So well, and your book is a great jump start for people because you have all these action steps. And by the way, I did not say for anybody who might want to call in the call-in number to get a free book from Dr. Lori Buckley. It is 888-874-4888. And a lot of people like to call, if they call at all, right after the break, which is at half past the hour. So if you have a question for Dr. Lori Buckley, please do call in, and you're going to get her book. It's just, it could be life-changing for you. And, of course, those of you who don't want to call in, you can get her book on her website, DR, for Dr. DR Lori, L-O-R-I, Buckley, B-U-C, K-L-E-Y.com, or at Amazon.com. Did I
correct.
Do all of that correctly, Lori?
You did. You did that well. Thank you, Diana. Yeah, I'd love to hear from you, answer your questions, and, yeah, I'd love to send you a free book. So give us a call if you want to.
And
take
maybe have another question.
Scary. Yeah.
So the third question that is important in terms of making a decision that you ask your readers on page 8 in your book, is there anything that will stop me from doing this? Can you address that a bit?
Yeah, that's really about the commitment. You know, it's
right.
Like, okay, how committed are you to this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes there may be something that will stop you, and that's not, that doesn't mean, okay, and therefore don't go forward, but address it. There
mm-hmm.
are going to be obstacles. You know, obstacles happen, and setbacks and challenges happen all the time. And if we stopped whenever we had a setback or an obstacle or a challenge, then most of us wouldn't achieve any of the successes that we have today. So you want to look at those and be proactive, really. It's so,
mm-hmm.
again, it sort of speaks to your level of commitment. And also there might be some things you go, well, yeah, what if this happens or that happens? And there might be some things you can do to address the challenges before they ever occur.
Exactly. And I like, because we move toward what we visualize, I like what you say in your book about visualizing. So you, on page 9, so you say, really think about what you're doing and how you're feeling. Picture it. Be there. Feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you? Who are you with? What are you wearing, and how do you feel? Happy, excited, blissful. And then you instruct your readers to go to Appendix A and complete Exercise 1, Getting Started, which is very good. You know, moving toward what we visualize is powerful. As far back as 2 years ago or whatever it was, because I was working toward my marriage family therapist license in California in those days, and I think it's still true, I had to earn 3,000 hours before I could go to Sacramento and take a written exam and then an oral exam. I'm not sure they still have the oral exam, but I earned my 3,000 hours. My supervisor signed off on them. And then I passed the exam the first time, the written, and I felt as though I had a pretty good chance at the oral exam, even though I knew a lot of really smart people in my field who had not, but passed, you know, the first time or the second time even. But I have a theatrical background, but what I did was, I saw exactly the suit I would wear. I would not wear too much makeup. I would wear my glasses as opposed to my contacts. And, you know, in an attempt, because this is, a while ago, in an attempt to look a little more academic, maybe. But
well,
then
you are
I was
gorgeous, and you're still gorgeous, and I could see you wanted to downplay that a little bit, and so they can see you for your mind. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then I was well prepared, but I visualized all of that, and I saw myself as calm, confident, and prepared. And
I love it.
And I knew within 1 minute of the, I don't know, 30 or 45 minutes that the oral exam took with three examiners, including two men and one woman who was very obese. So she, you know, if I hadn't downplayed myself, you know, she, and in fact, she asked me a question later. Well, I won't get into that, but that, you know, what if a client comes on to you? So I was prepared for that, too. But the point is, I visualized my success, and it worked.
Yes, it does work, because you were able to visualize that, you were able to be calm, you were able to be confident, and those things are really important in the work that you do. And another thing I want to point out is, you think about it, you forget about these things as you're talking about it, I'm thinking, wow. The things that you have to do to become, the idea to become a psychologist, I mean, I remember when I first thought of it, it seemed so impossible. What it takes to become a psychologist, and you could fill in that word with anything, what it takes to become, be in a happy relationship, to become a professor, to graduate any kind of college, whatever it is you want to fill it in with, it can be really, really overwhelming. I mean, you're right that, you know, forget all of the school. You know, you're talking, 12 years of...
Yes.
Yeah. Well, no, not 12. You're talking about 8 to 10 years of college, right? And then you got your internships and your hours and all of the exams and all of that. And that's just to get licensed, right? And so, I mean, if you were to think about that, it would be really easy to go, forget it. You know, I'm not doing it. But what keeps you going? What keeps you going? It's the decision, right? It's the decision.
The decision.
To be a psychologist or to be a therapist. And what is that decision based on? It can't just, like losing weight, for example. I want to lose weight. I'm going to lose weight. My resolution, I'm going to lose 10 pounds or 20 pounds. And, you know, I'm going to go to the gym. It's pretty empty. It's not enough to keep someone motivated, really. I mean, what's motivating about that? But when you get really clear about why and what it is you want, and you think, okay, I want to have energy. I want to feel sexy. I want to put on my jeans and feel good when I look in the mirror. You know, I want to feel confident and strong and healthy. And you picture yourself feeling that way. And you feel how good it feels. I mean, when you can really do that, then, you know, going to the gym is a whole other thing. So it's not about the pounds. It's not about doing these things that in the book. It's about what it is that you get from doing it and being clear about why you want to do that and committing to doing it. And so that's really what it's all about. That's such an important part of it. So that's why it's different than goals, really. It's so much richer.
You are wonderfully articulate, Dr. Lori, and as you are in your book. So we're going to go to a break shortly here, but I want to remind any of you listening live that you can get her book, which is wonderful, if you call 888-874-4888. I hope I did that right. I think I did. So call in with a question for Dr. Lori, and you'll get her book. When we return from the book, we're going to talk about your chapter 2, Cherish Your Partner. This is really important to, as we approach Christmas, I've been suggesting to my couples that they write up for their homework, create an adoration list by asking your partner to write down, I'm suggesting 7 non-material things that would make him or her feel cherished by you, and then make a similar list for yourself.
I like it. Yeah, that's fabulous. And I love how you say non-material.
Yes, well, especially this time of the year.
I just
saw a couple, and they're just lovely young couple. I see couples of all ages, don't you as well?
I do, and I love it. Yeah.
But this is a young couple, and they're fundamentalist Christians, and so they were both virgins when they got married, and which was fairly recently, and we're doing a lot of sex education in the counseling. It's just wonderful because they're like sponges. They're soaking it all up, and she's learned to have an orgasm since we've started orgasms, and it's great. I do, as I think you do, give them articles to read and things to watch, and of course you and I have done at least one Great Sex for a Lifetime where we've narrated. We were both narrating.
Together. We worked on it together, yeah.
We did the
sexual pregnancy too, didn't we?
No, I didn't do the pregnancy one. You did that.
Oh, darn. Sorry about that.
You've done a lot of Sinclair Institute, and people can see what you've done by going to bettersex.com. But we did Great Sex for a Lifetime, Volumes 1 and 2. And I loan this out to my couples, even this young couple that I just mentioned, even though it targets baby boomers, because the information is solid. And
it's the same. It's the same, right?
That's right.
No matter what age you are, yeah. So, certainly there's different ways to look at it, but it's all solid information. Yeah.
Exactly. So when Dr. Lori and I return, we're going to talk more about this cherish step, and then going on to having more fun, which is a big part of her book, a big part of her philosophy. So I know you want and your life. Oh, absolutely, and mine too. That's one reason That's one reason we're friends, Lori. We have very similar.
The name of your show, right?
Yeah, Love, Lust, and Laughter.
And that's what my book's about, actually. When you think about it, I should have named it Love, Lust, and Laughter. Much better title.
No, your title is great. Anyway, you and I will talk more after the break, so stay with us, everybody. Thank you. Cosa leggerei con che libro affascini il tuo cuore e se ti perderei nel labirinto di un amaro. We're back. This is Dr. Diana Wiley with Dr. Lori Buckley, and we're talking about her work, her book, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. And I especially love her chapter 3, Have Fun. I remember, Lori, maybe 3 years ago when I was there in Pasadena seeing you, and you said you often ask a couple, when was the last time you had fun together?
And yeah, I do.
Yeah, and I've been... Ever since that inspiration, I've been asking my couples the same thing.
And what are you finding?
Well, that especially for some of my older couples who've been together a long time, they look at each other and they'll often say, well, we haven't been having much fun. And I go, well, we've got to change that.
Yeah, it's true, right? I mean... It's interesting. It's something that a lot of people don't think about. And even when they come to therapy, it's great that they're willing to do the work and you know, that they're doing therapy, which is wonderful. But it's also important that part of that, you know, quote unquote work is to just be together and have fun together. And I love the quote, that I picked for this chapter. When I read books, you know, books that have quotes.
Right.
Sometimes I just look through all the quotes. I love reading the quotes, so I had to put quotes in my book. But I love this one. You can discover more about a person in an hour of play than in a year of conversation.
And who did that? Plato.
Plato, yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. But, you know, it's so important. Look, our lives are stressful. Let's face it. You know, we've got a lot of stressors and responsibilities and things in our life. And we want to have our relationship be that soft spot, be that, you know, that respite, that place that we can, you know, that we can relax and we can play. And, you know, somebody once asked me what I think the number one secret is, and I don't know if I might have written this in my book, but of what, you know, keeps a relationship happy. And while there is no any one perfect answer or best answer, I do find that when I see couples that are really happy, or I see them doing this work and they get to another place, there is a lightness and a playfulness about them. And laughing and having fun is such an important part of that.
It sure is. And you probably remember Steve Allen, who preceded Johnny Carson. I mean, you might have been a little girl, but anyway, he was wonderful. And have you ever met his son? Well, Steve Allen Sr. has passed on, but his son, Steve Allen Jr., is a sex educator and an MD, and he's been at some of our conferences.
Yeah, I know of him, but I have not had the pleasure or fortune of meeting him.
Yeah, he's wonderful, and he reminds us that silly had Steve Allen Jr. The word silly did not originally mean ridiculous or trivial, because it comes from the old English salaig, which meant blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy.
Wow.
And he says, Steve Allen Jr., that's what my work's all about. Silliness is the way to feel all four things. And he and his wife have a little chalkboard.
Yeah.
Because he says rarely are partners in the same mood at the same time. So he has a chalkboard on the bedroom door, and it lists, it has a list of lovemaking moods. And I love this. Number one, quick, recreational, aerobic, and then I want to go to sleep. Number two, I'm not so interested, but I'll go along. To number three, reverent and spiritual, a three-hour momentous event.
Wow.
I know. And then you simply put a check mark by the appropriate box to indicate your interest. Isn't that, well, see, that's playful.
I love it.
And the more we can laugh and play, because sex is about play. If we could only remember that. Isn't that true, Lori?
Absolutely, and I think, you know, it can feel really serious. And, you know, I'm thinking as you're reading that list, which I love, it's such a great idea, a lot of people think of sex as one thing, right? And they usually think more towards the third one than the other two, or the second one, right?
Yeah.
Or the first one. Anyways, what it seems to be when you have this idea that sex is this one thing, and I think a lot of couples fall into this,
yes,
that it either has to mean that, you know, that there's intercourse and both people are having orgasms,
mm-hmm,
or that it needs to last a long time, or that it needs to be just quick because everybody's too tired. I mean, so when we have this one idea of what it is, it's not only limiting, but it's really problematic. Because one, it certainly isn't all that enjoyable after a certain amount of time, and that very limitless way of having sex is limitless. And so you're going to be having less sex, and it's going to be less enjoyable or less pleasurable, which is also going to lead to less sex. And so then when you're having sex, you know, whenever you have it, which is going to be less often, it then becomes even a bigger thing. It becomes more serious. You know, if you're only having sex, you know, once a month or a couple times a month, it becomes much more serious than if you're having it, you know, once or twice or three times or four times a week.
Well, yes, and we have to remind our clients that sex does not equal intercourse, that there are all these other things you can do. There was a big study done on foreplay, and the women's biggest wish was for men to slow down, do more, and care more. And typical comments in the survey included too short, too conventional, too predictable. My husband doesn't understand that foreplay is an important part of my sexual experience. He hardly ever bothers. It's always very cursory, like he's so bored. And yeah, we need to be more playful. We need to be more creative. We need to have a little more fun. Your action steps in your book, about having more fun. You have fun suggestions on your page 52, which I like a lot. Go to an amusement park, take a dance or a cooking class together, sex shop, buy each other a toy, play a game, and you go on comedy club, role play, a night of play. I mean, there are lots of really good suggestions here, Lori, that can be expanded.
You find the one that feels good for you. And mm-hmm. I have to comment on you know, what you read. It's so true. I hear the same thing as you do, right? Women come in and they're like, and then men do it too. And it's like, well, yeah, sex is bad because, you know, he doesn't do this and she doesn't do that. And, mm-hmm. and we get into this place that we are disempowered, that we are, you know, kind of at a place of resignation. It's like, well, I can't do anything. Sex isn't good because he doesn't do this thing. And certainly there are people who will say, well, I've told him a million times, right? I've told him over and over and over again, and he he doesn't pay attention, he doesn't listen. But it's really important to look at what are the things, rather than complaining about what's going on. And again, I get it. Sometimes we think that we're really communicating in a very effective way about what we want. But if it's not happening, we can look at it again and think, okay, what can I actually do differently?
Mm-hmm.
What can I do? And I think what happens is we get caught up, men and women, in that place of resignation where there's nothing I can do. I've asked a million times, there's nothing I can do. So, you know what? This is just what it is. And then we get more unhappy and more unhappy and more unhappy, and sex becomes less pleasurable, and our relationship becomes more disconnected. And this is something that we easily can get into. And many couples can relate to this. I can relate to it myself. And again, it happens when we stop trying, when we stop growing, when we stagnate. And so that's another point of this book. It's like, okay, you can make a decision about not what your partner's going to do, but what you need from them, although part of the decision is to be able to communicate that in an effective way, but to be able to, what can you do to make your relationship better? And you'd be surprised at the things that you can do.
Yes, including, maybe this is a good segue into your chapter about talk, you know, mm-hmm. the four-letter word that leads to better sex.
Right.
It's not
right.
F-U-C-K, it's T-A-L-K.
Really? That's great, yes, yes.
And,
exactly.
I'm always encouraging my clients to avoid psychic sex because a lot of folks believe, you know, if you really loved me, you should know.
Exactly.
So I say it's like going on a treasure hunt without any clues. Communication is necessary, especially in the light of day when you can see your partner's face and the subtle reactions. You can say, you know, I was reading an article, or I was reading Lori Buckley's book. It would be good.
I'm listening to Dr. Diana Wiley's show.
Oh, thank you very much. We mutually support each other, don't we? And realize that there are some things I don't know about what you enjoy in bed, and I want to create that kind of pleasure for you. Isn't that a lovely thing to say to your partner? So then you can describe what draws you to him or her and how that makes you feel.
Yeah, it is a wonderful thing to ask. Now, it may be that mm-hmm. the partner on the other end of that is embarrassed to say something, doesn't know how to, maybe doesn't mm-hmm. even know what it is. But I'll tell you what, regardless of that, it mm-hmm. still is wonderful to have a partner who is interested in that, you know, who has that desire
yes.
to make you happy and want to learn about you and what makes you tick. And, yeah, there's no way... No way, at least if you're in a long-term committed relationship, mm-hmm. that you can have the kind of sex that you can have if you're communicating effectively. So in and out of bed, right? Because if we're feeling connected and we feel safe to talk about what's bothering us and also to be able to state the things that we really are grateful for and to show that appreciation, sex becomes much better as well, right? So it's never so one-dimensional. It's never just about sex or just about the relationship because they impact each other so fully. Which, you know, again, which is one of the reasons I wrote this book. I find that that is lacking in a lot of the books out there. They're very focused on either the relationship or the sex, and they don't really address both in a
yeah. Oh, that's
way
so
that
true. And actually, that in Gottman's own ways, because they've always focused more on communication and conflict and not so much sex. But he did talk about the two parts of the bookstore, right? The relationship,
yep.
And then the sex. And so,
he's incorporating it, too. I mean, there was a time, I mean, I as you probably did, have seen the Gottmans for many, many years, and not that long ago I went to, a workshop at a conference that him and his wife were at, and sex was not mentioned once, not once.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's a very big part of what they do, which is so fabulous.
And
I mean,
it's about time.
Yes.
But anyway, your book, so in your chapter on talk, mm-hmm. I like your suggested action steps on page 21. Listen more than talk.
Mm-hmm.
Establish time to not talk about the kids. Oh, this is so important. Work or your household.
Yeah.
And ask open-ended questions, which can't be
Absolutely.
Answered with one word. Those action steps are brilliant and essential. Can you expand on any of them or all of them?
Well, you know, we all love to talk, and sometimes, you know, if our partner is unhappy with something or they're voicing either a request or a complaint, or sometimes it may even be a criticism, which we know is never a good thing. But, you know, when we hear those things, it just puts us into automatic, right? We just go into automatic, and we find ourselves explaining, defending, attacking sometimes, because what they're saying is so difficult to hear.
Mm.
And it's really a bad deal, right? When your partner is upset about something and they're letting you know that they're upset about something, and what they get is a partner who is upset that they're upset, rather than a partner who is there listening with, you know, with generosity and love and compassion and saying,
yes.
Tell me what's bothering you, baby. You know,
mm-hmm.
that's what we all want. So what's not, it's not only just great for the person who is wanting to be heard, but this is the thing that a lot of people don't understand until they understand it. When we listen, it actually puts us into a calmer state, because when we can really understand what's going on, and what is upsetting our partner, what is upsetting for our partner, then we can understand that, one, it's not about who we are. It's something that's going on for them. And it actually puts us in a position where we can do something. We can do something to actually help our partner feel supported and loved. And that is a gift. And it's a great opportunity for, again, not just the speaker to be heard, but the listener to feel much better about that interaction.
Well, that's so important. I'm really glad that you articulated that. And your exercise 4 on page 54 in your book, you have some really good, and you elaborate on each point under how to communicate effectively, self-disclose, give choices, make requests, be positive, take timeouts. Oh, boy, is that ever important, where you can calm down a little bit.
Absolutely.
Listen.
Probably the most important, actually.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Yeah.
Because it for some people it may feel great to just unload in the moment and be angry.
Mm-hmm.
But long term, it doesn't work.
Yeah, the consequences, the negative consequences are too great. They really are. And it does feel good. It does feel good to scream and yell and, you know, tell the partner all the things that are wrong with them. But, you know, those words They're destructive. They don't go away. You know, the old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. That's not true. The words
well,
are
it
much
creates,
more damaging.
It creates emotional scar tissue.
Exactly. The bones will heal, but that emotional scar tissue is difficult to get through. So, you know, when we're in that state of rage or being emotionally flooded, we cannot speak in a loving, effective way. You know, I'm not going to get into the whole brain science of it, but, you know, the
We could,
but the higher functioning part of our brain, it's not working. We can't be in that fight or flight mode and in a really effective communication mode at the same time. It's just impossible. It's factually impossible. So really, when you're in that state, just to know there's nothing productive or constructive that you're going to say. You can't be there in a way that is going to improve the relationship in any way. If anything, it can do really some serious damage. So to be able to have an agreement ahead of time, before you have those moments where you're in, both of you, in that emotionally flooded state, to agree to have that time out when either one of you get to that place, to be able to calm down so you can have a loving, constructive conversation is really, really important, especially for, you know, highly reactive couples who are screaming at each other all the time.
Yes, and so to have an agreement that let's take a 20-minute time out, and if the weather is good where we live, we can take a walk and
yes,
calm down and think about, you know, there you can talk to your partner and present your case in 5 minutes, and a lot of men fear the woman because she'll go on and on and on and on.
Right.
Because she has more words, you know, about Al-Anon. Well, on and on and on and on is for compulsive talkers. But, you know, a lot of men fear that because women do have more words and they don't feel like they can cope with a woman
right.
who's angry and, yeah.
And what men don't realize is, that if she's actually feeling heard and validated, her words will not be as wordy.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Say a little more about that because that is so important.
So, you know, I hear all the time, well, she's always complaining about the same thing. You know, all she ever says is, why don't you? And you go on and on and on. And it's like, well, you know, whereas media is our unmet needs. So if she's still complaining about this thing, let's take a look at what that thing is. You know, there might be something to that. But what men are doing or women are doing is when we hear what our partner is upset about, we take it as an absolute truth, right? And it's not a fact. We need to remember that. If our partner is upset about something, it's because there is something for them in the way that they are experiencing it that is upsetting. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, factually wrong or that we did anything, you know, quote unquote wrong or that there's anything wrong with us. But there is something wrong for our partner. And when we can listen from that place of compassion to understand, not necessarily agree, but to understand what is upsetting them, again, everybody wins, right? We have our partner is going to feel heard and understood, and we are going to feel on the listening end, and again, it could be male or female, we're going to feel better because there's actually things that we can do to make it better, and, you know, we don't have to keep listening to the same thing over and over and over again. So, that's, you know, it's an action step. And so I have action steps in these books, but, you know, there are thousands, maybe millions of things that you can do. And being able to talk to your partner in a way to figure that out together, you know, come up with some kind of an agreement or resolution so your partner isn't feeling bad. And instead of you telling them why they shouldn't be feeling bad, you know, you're both going to win. The relationship is going to feel so much better in the end.
Well,
and
this is it's brilliantly and clearly explained in your book. So you've got action steps in this regard. Ask your partner to tell you something about him or herself that you don't know. Start a conversation about hopes and dreams for the future. Plan an adventure together. Now, this is after you've decided to express what feels good during sex. This is when you've moved on. There's...
Well, again, it all affects everything, right? Our relationship outside of the bedroom very much affects what is going to be going on in the bedroom. If we're feeling loved, cherished, respected, connected, then we're going to want to have sex more often, and sex is going to be a much better experience. And when we're connecting intimately and having fun in the bedroom, then we're going to feel better outside of the bedroom, too. So it's all of those things. And, you know, the other things about talking is we want a partner who's actually interested in us, and there's always things to learn about each other. We never know everything there is to know about our partner, even though we think we do because we've been together with them for so many years.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're always discovering new things, not only about our partner, but ourselves. So even though you may have known everything, you know, at one time, your partner is no longer the same partner today that they were certainly years ago, or maybe even a year ago or a month ago. We have different desires and different ways of thinking about things as we evolve as human beings.
Lori, you are just so wise, and I'm hoping that soon in the new year, 2014, I can have you back as a guest.
I would love to be back.
Good, because we didn't even begin to talk about Chapter 5, Turn On Your Senses, your Chapter 6, Masturbate, that's a good one. Your Chapter 7, Decide to Exercise. 8, Make Time for Sex. That's a huge one.
That's important, yeah.
And Chapter 9, Decide to Expand Your Sexual Knowledge. And 10, Try New Stuff. I mean, there's lots more for us to discuss, and we'll do it, and I'll be in touch with you about, we'll find a date. In the meantime, for listeners, please, I'll be writing up a summary of this show shortly. And in the meantime, you'll want to go to DR for Dr. Lori, L-O-R-I, Buckley, BUCKLEY.com for her book, or from Amazon.com, 21 Decisions for Great Sex and a Happy Relationship. Hey, Lori, thank you so much for just a really stimulating hour. It's been just wonderful, and I appreciate you a lot.
Oh, and you know, it goes right back at you. You know, I love having you in my life, and I am inspired by you as well, and I really, really appreciate you having me on the show, and we'll talk soon.
We'll talk very soon. So, Merry Christmas to everybody, or Happy Holidays if you're not celebrating Christmas. And I hope it's a blessed and fun time for you. And I will be doing some repeat shows because next Tuesday is Christmas Eve. The following Tuesday is New Year's Eve. So, so Lori, you're the last live show I'm doing in 2013.
Yay! And so, listeners, thank you for listening. But, you know, check out the book. This is a great time. This is a new beginning, a new year to make some new decisions and to have better sex and a happier relationship.
Absolutely, Lori. And thank you, everybody. And thank you, Lori. And, hey, count your blessings. Bye-bye. Cosa leggerai con che libro affascinante?